Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 772. It's the 10th of May, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Julian Traeger, CEO of Anglo Pacific Group. That's APF. And Julian covers some of their highlights from their trading update today and some impressive figures coming out there. Also on the podcast, successful private investor Smudge Dan talks about the following companies: Management Resource Solutions, MRS, or Mrs. London Capital Group, that's LCG, and Westminster Group, WSG. Plus, I also have financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about results due out from Supergroup, that's SPG, and BT, of course, BT.A. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the most liked RNSs on our platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Julian Traeger, CEO of Anglo Pacific Group. That's APF ticker. Julian, thank you for coming back on.
Pleasure, Justin.
Now, you've got some news out today, and we'll go through that in a bit. Just for people listening who are not aware of your what you do at Anglo Pacific, could you give a brief summary, Julian, as to what you do there, please?
Sure. We're the only listed royalty company on the LSE. We're also listed in Toronto, and we basically get a share of the revenues from mining businesses around the world, particularly coal mines in Australia, but we're very well positioned globally, also in Spain, Canada, and in Brazil.
Excellent stuff. And the news out today is an update. Is it Q1? I've got to say I'm flying blind here, Julian, so I'll leave it up to you to explain and highlight some of the points from your update, please, if you would.
With pleasure, yes. Well, we always said that this year would be a year of strong growth, and Q1 is showing that, coming through significantly. So basically, we've got royalty income up from just under £2 million. Total income is now £10 million in Q1. So a very significant growth driven largely by higher coal prices, but also production at the various mines we have royalties over. And as a result of that significant growth in income, our net debt is practically zero by the middle of May. So we are generating significant amounts of cash and income this year, and that bodes well for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask that. I mean, like you said, the coal prices are up, and it's looking good results here. So, and you see this translating through to the rest of the year?
Yes, I think we expect strong growth in revenues for the whole year, and that will translate into significant increases in our dividend cover. And it should be good news for shareholders during the year as those results come through and the stock continues to re-rate.
Okay, and just to drill down, excuse the pun there, but into your actual investment. So where are they? You said they're largely based in Australia. Is it three in Australia, is that right?
Yeah, we have three investments in Australia. They are mainly coal, but also uranium producers. And then we have a portfolio including vanadium in Brazil and copper and gold in Spain. And we just did a new uranium royalty in the first quarter of this year, which has produced roughly a 10% return in Q1. But that includes some repayment of the income for the second half of last year. But everything's going according to plan. So it is a well-diversified portfolio of royalties.
Yeah, and uranium is especially interesting, because I know there's sort of multi-year lows, but there are a lot of analysts and brokers saying that, you know, it could, when uranium prices move, they really move. And is that the kind of thing you're expecting?
Well, it is what we're expecting, but we're not expecting it imminently. We're long-term investors, and so, you know, we expect uranium prices to move in 2 to 3 years' time. But at the moment, we are positioning ourselves to take advantage of that increase when it occurs.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to know, Julian, when when you take a position, an investment here, like you said, you are looking at the long-term sort of fundamentals, but you obviously must keep an eye on the macro environment, because there's talk now of the sort of global, even, you know, the IMF has said the global growth is expanding. Do you keep an eye on that as well when you're investing?
Yes, we are exposed to macro trends, and clearly global growth expanding is helpful for the commodities which we're exposed to. We're also very interested in seeing whether President Trump gets his infrastructure plan through, because that could be a significant game changer for demand for base and bulk materials which we're exposed to. We've been used to China calling the tunes for commodities for the last 10 or 15 years, but if the biggest economy in the world starts to be a player, then that's a very interesting new dynamic as well.
Absolutely. And, of course, there's China there, which looks to be stabilizing. And, you know, they've been expanding. In fact, the last GDP report was above analyst expectations. So that must bode well, mustn't it?
Yes. I mean, China, you know, goes ebbs and wanes, but generally it continues to grow consistently at much higher rates than we see in the West, and they do have a voracious demand for commodities. So I think we're exposed to growth in China, infrastructure spend in America, and obviously also Indian demand as another contributor to the whole commodity picture.
And as far as your investments are concerned, are you always on the lookout for new investments?
Absolutely. I think we're in the benign period of the next mining cycle. These cycles generally take 10 years, and we're 1 year into it. So we think it's a relatively safe period to be making more investments, and we are looking to do so largely funded by retained earnings from our very significantly higher income.
Excellent stuff, Julian. Well, listen, if someone's listening to this and they're nodding their head and agreeing with everything you're saying, but they're not following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Absolutely. Well, the first is that we're terribly cheap, so we're trading at a PE ratio of between 5 and 10. The second is that we have a high dividend yield, 6%, with the prospect of it increasing, and that dividend has very high coverage. And the third is that we're trading at a very significant discount to net asset value. So I think those are three characteristics everybody looks for in shares, and those who are willing to take the plunge should be rewarded going forward.
Excellent. Julian, it's good to talk to you, and hopefully speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is successful private investor Smudge Dan. You're right, fella.
Yeah, very well, Justin. Very well, thanks.
Well, we haven't spoken for a while because I've been away, you've been away. Then at one point said, no, the market's a bit toppy. I'm not going to come on and talk anything. And I like that. I like the fact that you say, you know, rather than just come on every week or every couple of weeks or every month, you realise that at the moment or the environment is not good. But first, what are we talking about? Because I know they did say to you, are you coming on tomorrow or yesterday? Because MRS is back, you know, Management Resource Solutions. And there's been so much gone on there since we last talked about them. I've lost track a little bit. I know you or John Zorbas involved. And so give us a roundup, please, Dan, as to what in your head. I mean, like you said before we come on, we could write a book about MRS, but let's try and keep it simple for people who are not quite aware of the story, if it's possible.
Yes, yeah, I'll try and keep it as simple as possible. Yeah. Well, I invested in there sort of, I think, over the last couple of years, I've been in and out and built up a sizable position following the acquisition of Sub-Zero Group, which is a mining services company based in New South Wales. So that acquisition went through in October. Mm-hmm. So and everything was looking good. You know, the macro environment for New South Wales coal had improved significantly with the coal price going up so much. So everything was looking quite rosy. And then sort of, I think it was late October, beginning of November, they went into suspension. And, you know, the sort of, you know, your sort of heart starts racing and you think, yeah, what the hell is going on here? This is absolutely a bolt from the blue.
Yeah.
And it subsequently transpired that the elements of the business, not the Sub-Zero part or not the Backman part, Backman being the sort of earth-moving services based up in Queensland, mm-hmm, but more, it was more to do with the consultancy business, which a couple of their large contracts had sort of they'd failed to deliver on, and effectively they were in default on, and there was a huge cash issue there, and that sort of started to come out around November time. The CEO was forced out. Then the new CEO was appointed. It was Joe Clayton, who was the guy who ran Sub-Zero before. And then the board came over to the UK in December, met up with a few shareholders. We obviously were concerned about everything that was going on. A group of the shareholders got together, and we suggested the appointment of two UK, being Nigel Burton and Trevor Brown, who generously offered up their services. The board at the time were very reluctant to employ these two individuals, and we couldn't really understand why. So we had several sort of EGM requests. Some of them were aborted, and it was a lot of toing and froing for a very long time. And we finally got our way in the end and got both of those non-execs appointed. Got the chairman, Murray De Almeida, removed. He was voted out.
Yeah.
And we also, John Zorbas of URU, agreed to come on to the board as chairman as well. So we finally got our way. It took a long time to get there. It was a lot of work. I mean, I played a very minor part in the whole thing. There were some other guys, notably Leon Hogan, who put in a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah.
Along with Trevor and Nigel to try and get this thing back on track, because we were inches away from a complete wipeout, basically. So the fact that it's even come back is massive, and it's come back into an environment where you've got one strong business in Backman that's going to turn over very good profits, and you've got a business in Sub-Zero, which could be the real sort of powerhouse of business, given the macro environment and the increased revenue that they're getting and the potential revenue going forward.
Because the share price, I think they're placing recently, the share price was at the time, when I think when it suspended, it was like 15 pence, and now it's opened up around about this placing price, what is it today, but 5 pence, just over 5 pence. So where do you, I mean, at the moment, I mean, it seems like a lot of risk there, because I suppose we don't really know how the business, but you said the two parts of those businesses are going well, Backman and Sub-Zero are going well. I mean, you're obviously still a shareholder. Do you see value from here, from this level, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I took some more in the placing. I would have taken some more had the open offer gone ahead. I'm pleased that the open offer didn't go ahead, because it kind of draws a line under any more immediate dilution, which was holding things back.
Yeah.
I think, you know, any time a share comes that's been in suspension and has had a checkered past, such as MRS, when it comes out, there's going to be a number of sellers. There were a number of vendors that were paid in shares rather than cash in order to preserve the cash position. So they probably will have sold down as well. So, you know, for me, it's all about the volume at the moment. The volume in the three trading days so far has been excellent. You know, I think we've got two potentially excellent revenue generating businesses that should be worth many multiples of the current market cap.
Yeah.
So I think anybody getting in at this level is doing very well. I'm happy to hold, and I'm convinced at some point I'll be back in profit. It's just a question of when. And that's dictated by news and dictated by, you know, market forces and you know, who's in for the longer haul and who wants to sell up with for a small gain. So
yeah. So it's around about 9 million market cap. And do you know the or estimate of what the revenue of those two companies are, Sub-Zero and Backman?
It's a movable feast, really. I think the Backman business is probably looking at around about $25 million revenue, something like that.
Yeah.
The Sub-Zero business, we've got to kind of get a handle on that, because there were various elements of that business prior to the acquisition, some of which weren't bought, some of which were. I'm thinking we're probably going to be looking at somewhere in the region of $50 million. For the Sub-Zero business on an annual basis, but with the potential to grow that probably exponentially over the next couple of years, depending on the route that the company wants to take.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And in the meantime, I suppose, like you said, there's going to be a little bit of a churn over the short term, so people can do their research. There's lots of holders out there. I know on social media, there's a lot of people supporting it and putting some tweets out. Now, I did a search yesterday and read some research, and there's a new website up, isn't there? So do some research. While it's at these levels, it's probably worth doing some research. Like you said, there may be a bit of short term.
Well, it's quite rare to get a business of this nature on AIM that's generating these sort of revenues, that has the potential to grow these sort of revenues by the amount they can for this type of market cap. You know, if you look around AIM, there's not much around that's similar to this. So it's well worth people just having a look and seeing what they think of it. And, you know, you can't ignore the past. But, you know, what I would say is that the people that we've got on board now are, as shareholders, incredibly lucky to have them. And I'm delighted that they're all there and feel much more relaxed now than I did a few months ago.
Marvellous. Okay, what other companies are you looking at, Dan?
So a few others. I mean, what I'm finding is, I think, as you alluded to earlier, that the market in general is quite toppy at the moment. I'm going through my watch list, and I've probably got about 200 companies on there, and I'm struggling to find a lot of value across the board, really. There are a few that are sort of notable. One that I've been adding to recently, which is a company called London Capital Group, LCG, which is an online services provider, trading provider. They have, again, you know, they've had their problems. They did a big sort of debt-to-equity conversion last year around July time at 5p. The share price has come off since then. I think the mid at the moment is about 2.75, given a market cap of about 10 million. Mm-hmm. But things are improving. I mean, they saw a 110% increase in revenue over the last 6 months. The cost of sales have gone down from 2.3 million to 1.9 million, despite the growth in revenue. And the loss they have has decreased 72% to 2.1 million. They've got cash of 3.3 million and short-term receivables of 10.6 million. So that's more than the current market cap. Mm-hmm. Another key thing for me is the shareholder constitution. We've got 91% held by notifiable holders as well. So very limited free float. So if a bit of good news, and you know, I can see a fairly significant move upwards on this one.
Good. Yeah, because I did notice the issues there a while back, but I stood back because it's a spread betting market at the moment. I mean, even IGG is in a bit of limbo, isn't it? Because they don't know how strict these new regulatory requirements are going to be. So it's worth keeping an eye on, I suppose, because people are suggesting. You know, the worry normally is always worse than the actual reality, isn't it? People start worrying and panicking, and then when they come out with the regulations, they're often not as bad, you know? But so it's worth keeping an eye on that.
Cool. Yeah. And companies of this size, you know, this sort of market cap, you know, it's prime for either a takeover or perhaps, you know, given the fact that 80% of the shares are held by one company, it wouldn't be surprising if the whole thing just got bought out by them or some sort of management buyout. So yeah. I just think from this level, it should do well. The results are coming up soon as well, so there might be some catalysts there. So took a position there, you can still get in around the lows as well. So I think that's worth a look. The other one, which I think is one that you're in at the moment as well, which I've now been in for 7 years to varying degrees, is WSG.
I think you were the first people who brought it to my attention, I think. And then Doc mentioned it as well, I think, around about the same time. And that was a while back. And we know, don't we, they've got this. In fact, you go over it. We know there's this Middle Eastern contract that has the potential. I wrote a blog on them about a month back, you know, to be transformative. And I think there's quoting £35 million a year in annual, in annual revenue. And this is like a market cap of, what, 12 million company? And so I know it's been a while, but they are still mentioning it. And they mentioned it quite positively. Even in the last update, they said, you know, this is at an advanced stage. And like I said, I just tweeted out something. I saw someone tweet something about they are actually looking for jobs working in the security airport in Oman, which is where this contract, I assume, is going to be, you know. So it's gaining momentum, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it is, and hopefully, you know, there's been a group of shareholders that have been in this for as long, and in some cases longer than I've been in it. And you know, for them, if nobody else, you know, I hope that the company does finally deliver on this contract, because there's been so many false starts. But you know, they are, you know, it's true, they are in negotiations on this Middle Eastern contract. The British government are involved as well in these negotiations. And, you know, if it does come off, then that sort of revenue visibility that they're going to have for a long-term contract, I believe this one's 15 years, you know, is going to, I mean, it's going to make the current share price look comical. So I think, you know, the way I would look at it is also that the underlying business, so the regular business that they have, and the ferry that they have out in Sierra Leone, you know, that's all sort of improving or coming online now. So that side of it is getting better. I think they're EBITDA break even now. So, you know, you're getting a steady business with the potential upside, significant upside, should this Middle Eastern contract or one of these other airport contracts that they're in discussion with come off. So it's a fairly good bet. It's not a million miles away from the placing price, which wasn't a huge placing. You know, Darwin are out you know, I reduced my position significantly when Darwin were bought back in before, because, I mean, you know, it's never a good thing, is it, them being involved? But as soon as they were out, like many things, there was a little bit of a bounce, but it didn't really bounce the way I think probably people would have thought. Some of the other shares have bounced following a Darwin being taken out.
Yeah, I think that was do you see that? I mean, I had Nicola Duke look at the chart. She said, once it gets above the 50-day moving average, it's going to go. But what I didn't think, she looking at a technical analyst, of course, she has no idea about the volume and stuff like that, really. So when that happened, it looked like it was going to go on a re-rate. You get that massive seller came in that one day and knocked it back down. And so it's determined, it's trying to get above this. And like you said, what I liked about Westminster Group, it's not just relying on this hopefully this contract coming through, their business is improving. And so that's a good thing anyway, isn't it? But hopefully, maybe, you know, we have less sellers around now. Like, it's only a matter of time. But if that contract does come in, I think we you know, this is one of those companies that will, you know, as long as there's no some massive sellers around, that will, I mean, I think, you know, bag overnight almost once that is announced. It's one of those things, they announce that on the RS in the morning, it's going to go crazy, you know?
Oh, absolutely. If that gets announced, you're looking at least three or four times the current share price, in my view. I can't see it not doing that, because people are just going to then think about other potential contracts. You know, it validates the whole process, basically. And, you know, people at the moment probably just don't believe because there have been that many false starts. But hopefully this time it's for real. But the AGM's coming up shortly as well, so I'm sure there'll be a few questions there as well.
Well, do you know what? We may be, you know, on the podcast this time next year, still discussing that contract. But it may even come in the next week. We never know. But
exactly.
But like I said, as it is, the underlying business seems to be getting better anyway. So, marvellous, Dan. Thanks for that, and hopefully speak next month, fella.
Cheers, Justin. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Conor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. You all right, fella?
Very good, thank you. You?
Yeah, not too bad. You know, it's a bit odd, I think, overnight, the Trump thing. You know, I don't know if you saw that, and I don't know if it had any effect, but it's really odd him sacking the boss of the FBI.
Oh, yeah, the FBI. Yeah, I think it's had some effect. You know, it's, I think, dragged down the dollar, if only slightly. I think, you know, it's just another example of the volatile nature of Trump's governance. You know, it doesn't necessarily have any direct influence on the market beyond highlighting sort of the unsavory aspects of his presidency, really. I think it came out of the blue as well. I think it's sort of, I was looking, I think the last time something like this happened was 1993, when Clinton fired his FBI director.
Did he?
I think that was under a lot less suspicious circumstances.
Exactly. There's two sides to it, isn't it? They're saying he sacked him because it was due to their investigation into the Hillary Clinton emails, wasn't progressing well, and he became involved in politics a bit too much. And the other side, anti-Trump, is saying, no, it's because he's investigating your affairs in Russia, and you don't like what he's come up with. So it's really odd. I mean, I suppose there's always going to be conspiracy around this anyway, isn't there? Whatever happens, you know, you sack the head of someone like the FBI, there's always conspiracy. We'll never find out the truth. And that's why they're politicians, I suppose. But there we are. OK, what are we looking at? Who's got results due, Connor?
First up, Supergroup tomorrow. You know, Supergroup owns the Superdry clothing brand. You know, yep. It's become a high street staple in the last, you know, half a decade.
I'm wearing a t-shirt today with Supergroup on it. So I've also got a jacket.
Oh, very nice. You know, I'm a big fan of their clothes. They're very well made, very comfy.
Yeah.
His chart is a bit of an odd one this year. You know, it's spiked towards £18 at the end of January on the back of its, you know, sort of half year post Christmas results, but then couldn't hold on to those gains during the day, and then since then sort of slumped for the last few months, and has sort of gained a bit of momentum in the last couple of weeks, and then at the start of May, when Next revealed its figures last week, that's all of course some investor fretting about the state of the high street and the retail sector, and dragged Supergroup a bit lower. So it's sort of interesting because its figures in January were pretty astonishing. You know, for the 10 weeks, you know, the key holiday period, it saw a 20% increase in revenue and a 15% rise in specifically the Superdry brand sales. And then its half year figures were even better, and revenue rose 31% to £344 million, and then pre-tax profit rose 10.4% to £12.7 million. So there's some really, really healthy figures, as well as good news on its sort of expansion into China and North America. Yet, like I said, it couldn't really hold on to those gains even for a single session. I think it's a stock that's been dragged down by wider concerns about the sector it finds itself in, rather than its own financial performance.
I think they've got a niche there, Supergroup. It's for the certain something year old, like myself, or like you're obviously a bit younger than me, but I think it's for people who are not, you know, don't want to be super trendy, don't want to look too out of fashion, just want to be right. And I think they've found that sort of mid-ground, haven't they, between being trendy and being old-fashioned. And it's right in the middle. For a certain something year old.
There's a good point there. It's like a solid, you know, you look nice in their clothes without it chasing trends, really.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a particularly cyclical business. It has sort of its key, you know, its hoodies and jumpers and t-shirts and things like that. But if you're not particularly bothered in fashion, but you want to look,
yeah, you know, don't look out of fashion. Then exactly.
But it's a good brand to go to.
You're right there. It'll probably suffer less because of that cyclicality, and it'll endure longer because they're just on the edge of fashion there. You know, not out of fashion, not right in trend, but just in the right place for people, say, I'd say over 20. How old are you, Connor?
25.
Yeah, so 25. So, you know, it's not teens' clothes, is it? And
no, exactly. You
know, I'm feeling quite trendy now. If you're wearing it, I'm 46. So, all right then, maybe I'm too old for it. Maybe I should go to Marks or somewhere. Well, I don't know. Marks for men has never been good. Okay, cool. So, so what did you say?
So I think it's going to be interesting how it performs on Thursday, just because, you know, traditionally its figures are very good. I think if it can reassure investors that it's sort of in a better position to weather the upcoming volatility in terms of the retail sector, if it's in a better position than, say, like Next and M&S, which are a bit more sluggish and a bit, again, chasing that kind of cyclical fashion that we were just talking about, I think it can push back above the £16 mark, and that's what we've seen our clients doing, buying just below that £16 mark. It's also, like I said, it's expanded into North America in the last few months. It's opened up stores in Manhattan and Philadelphia and Orlando. That Manhattan one, I imagine, being key, you know, a big flagship New York store. So if it can be assured that it's in a decent position, I think it should do okay this week. Okay. I think, and again, like I said, that's what our clients are.
Okay, cool.
On.
And what's anything else being released? Any other figures being
BT,
released?
BT Group's, I guess, probably the big one this week.
Oh, you know, I'm looking forward to this. Do you know what? Because this is, like I said, me and a couple of mates on the weekend, we do this experiment. Have I mentioned this to you? Probably have.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it last week, yeah.
Yes. Like I said, we're trying to go from 50 trades or less for £1,000 to £100,000. 10%, and so you roll it over onto the next, getting 10% or more. We've done the first two trades successfully, which was EasyJet Sky. We looked at Next, it's got away from it. We put a price limit in it, say £39.99. But even after disastrous results they had, this price is still rising. I suppose the badness is already priced in. So BT is maybe another option here, and it's coming down to that all-time low. And I think we should maybe jump in before the results, because they've reported quite badly. They've had these problems in Italy, haven't they? And the losses can go from 135 million to, what was it, 500 million or something ridiculous.
It was 140 or something to 530 million when they announced in January. I think our clients are exactly the same as what you're saying there. We've been seeing them really aggressively buying around that £3 mark. I think because beyond the Italy scandal, things are okay at BT. You know, I think... In January, they announced that like you're saying, the cost of the Italian accounting scandal was triple what was initially expected. A few days later, they then released their, I think it was their third quarter figures. And yeah, though pre-tax profit plunged 37% or something, you know, again, that's related to the cost of the Italian accounting scandal, its other figures were pretty good. Like EE, you know, its mobile division, had all-time record high revenue growth. And then its broadband and TV revenues also rose 8%. You know, it's got a solid base, despite that I think has been overlooked due to the cost of that Italian scandal. Obviously, it's not out of the woods yet, and if, God forbid, if BT announces that it's going to cost any more, then it's in trouble. However, if it can show that Italian accounting scandal is by and large, you know, in the past now, I don't think there's any reason why it can't rise from that £3 mark. Again, like you said, it's not going to take a lot of good news to cause it to rise from that level, just because of how poorly it has done in the last few months and how little momentum it has had up until now, despite its overall figures being okay. You've also got, you know, it's legally separating Openreach, which has brought to an end that sort of saga, you know, with Ofcom. So again, something that had perhaps been plaguing the stock price is now should be in the past, you know.
Yeah, I think it may be worth, like I said, how much... They said at the time, you know, they didn't know how much this Italian scandal was going to cost them. But I think when they looked at it a second time around, they came up with $530 million. I think pretty much they're going for the top end, you know, the worst case scenario. If they're clever, they would have done that. And then they can come up with the trading update and say, well, it's not as bad as we thought, actually. It's about $400 million. And hopefully maybe it'll rally on that. But we'll see. We'll see, Connor. And thanks for the heads up. And have a nice weekend, even though it's a Wednesday, but we'll speak next week. Thanks very much.
Yeah, speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, Boom, Audio Boom. At four, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. At two, Dan mentioned them early on, Management Resource Solutions, that's Mrs. Ticker. At number one, phenomenal rise. The last 6 days were about 400-odd%, and I was lucky to capture most of it. And that's my square. I have top slice, mid-slice, and almost bottom slice. Woohoo! But I still got my foot there, toe in there, because you never know where they could go. A lot of potential there still, I think, in my square. But for now, they've had a strong rally. I think they'll pull back and consolidate for a bit, and then hopefully some good updates, positive updates on revenue generation in the coming year will help them go higher. All right, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets the last 24 hours were at five, Decal Oil, DKL, comment a re-press speculation. Apparently they're in talks to take over Norpalm, a Norwegian palm oil producer. At four, Cadence, that's KDNC, MacArthur Minerals Update. At three, I talked with them with Dan earlier, it's Management Resource Solutions and the board's decision concerning possible open offer, and they've quashed that now. They said it's not going to happen. At two, Motive Bio, appointment of some to Scientific Advisory Board, some big hitters there. And number one, the most liked RNS this morning was the new corporate presentation from Talou Energy, TLOU. And I've got to say, the share price there is really frustrating me, just bouncing along a support level there, just over 6 pence, which is not far off the placing price. And I'd advise you to do some research into Talou. I really would. I think it has the potential to go. And it's not far off where it was like 6 months ago. And they're a lot further down the development of coal bed methane to power in Botswana, stable government. So I've done a couple of blogs, and if you go to the blog post here, you'll see below a couple of blog posts I've done. But of course, it's information on which to base your research. It's not investment advice. But I think, you know, has the potential to get this company to go from a small, you know, market cap to a mid-sized market cap. And if you look at the track record of Tony Gilby, the CEO, he's done it twice before, talking, you know, small market cap companies to billion-dollar market cap companies. So it's no stranger to him. And they have, like I said, the gas reserves. They have the funding. And they have a request for a proposal for a power station from the Botswanan government. So it's all lining up there. And as yet, the thing that's not moving is the share price. So check it out. And on AIM, when you're investing in companies that have no dividends, you're completely looking for, you know, capital upside. And that means you have to get in at a good level. And I believe that's where Talou is at the moment. It's a decent sort of entry level. If you've done your research, and you believe it's there's good potential there. It's down to you. Just information here. I'm not trying to sway you. I could be talking absolute nonsense as far as you're concerned. That's why I say do your own research. Anyway, that's it for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.